Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
What's happening, y'all? This is Tyre Wilson with another episode of Elevate Your Game. Today, we have husband, father, pastor, executive director, Josh Merrill. Oh, former pro player, by the way. Let's not mention that. I know he's sitting down right now. He's 6'9", and he has a strap. We win every adult league we play in, about 7 or 8 championships at this point for the last few years. So come see about us in the leagues. Josh, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. We should clarify, we don't win all of them. We just quickly forget the ones we lose.
right. We're not going to talk about 2 years ago.
No, we don't talk about that.
Absolutely. So here on the show, we love to bring just basketball and culture together and just talk about your experience in life with basketball and how it's connected you to where you are today. We love to start the show off with our Wall of Hoop movies, though. Wall of Hoop movies. So many great movies. Which one is your favorite and why?
Okay, it's hard to pick, but I'm going to be totally selfish, and I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm going to go semi-pro.
Okay.
I don't know if anyone's picking semi-pro, but again, totally selfish because I was in that movie.
Oh, you were in semi-pro?
So if you look real close, I was, what a great story. It was actually when I first moved to L.A., and I went down and auditioned. I'm like, well, 1970s. Basketball movie, like I'm a perfect fit, you know, thin shooter, you know, I had grew out the mustache, really had a really nice mustache, and so I got put on the Nets, so one of the team they play, and just a cool experience to be on set and do that. I had the, you know, I had the time to be down there, meet Will Ferrell, and you know, just be on a movie set and a basketball thing. So that was a great experience. Actually, the first time I met the professor. Which we have a long relationship. He was in that. He was an extra on the other team too. So, that was a great experience. If you look closely, you can see me.
I see. Yeah. You're not hard, can't miss you, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, one of the funniest movies. There's a lot of people who haven't seen it.
Yeah.
And man, I say like, you know, when you're of age too, go watch that movie.
Yeah, I didn't know it was going to be
funny,
all that, but
right.
It's really funny, man. Yeah, you know, Will Ferrell and sports movies are always good.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's funny. So Andre 3000 was the absolute worst basketball player we had. And in the movie, he's supposed to be the best player.
Right.
Like a couple of guys could kind of play. So they had to pull all, you know, you're watching them how they pull all these tricks out and his double and all that type of stuff. Was pretty cool how they worked all that. I remember just trying to help him ball handle. Like it was hard for him. Like he had just never played basketball, and he's supposed to be the stud of the league. It was just kind of funny.
Movie magic.
Yeah, absolutely, magic. Absolutely.
Awesome, man. Little unknown fact about you. That's pretty cool. Awesome. So you're currently now the sports pastor at Shepherd Church in Porter Ranch, California, one of the bigger churches in the Southern California, the Valley. Awesome sport league. Probably one of the best basketball courts, in my opinion, in the Valley. So what was your journey like playing? You grew up in San Diego, playing high school, went to Pepperdine, then over to UCSB. What was your journey like in basketball? Kind of what was your niche in basketball that took you all those years?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I just loved sports my whole life. Like I played 3 sports all the way through high school. I actually had been more highly recruited for football than I was for basketball. But basketball is just more fun.
Yeah.
And I in football, I only play one position. In basketball, I can play kind of multiple positions. And I played late. I didn't really start playing until high school. In junior high, I kind of played for my team. But I was always a big kid. And so for me, like what was able to really help me play at the next level was being big and be able to shoot. Mm-hmm. So my dad, he's only 6'1". I'm 6'9". Whoa. But he was a gym rat. You know, he played a little college ball. But, you know, his thing, well, he was a shooter. So when I started shooting, I was already big enough and strong enough to have right mechanics. Ah. So I didn't have to like relearn all that stuff. And he was like, you know, we're going to shoot, we're going to do it right. So I always had a rebounder and I always had my shooting coach there. Oh, so wow. I never got to mess that stuff up. And then obviously some God-given abilities in that. But, you know, being able to shoot the ball at 6'9", I was really ahead of my time as far as how they ran offenses for stretch fours, because Dirk and I are about the same age and similar games, yeah, as far as being able to stretch the defense with the shot. So for me, my strength was being able to do both. Like in college, I would say it was to be able to shoot, but to be able to play overseas was to be able to, I could take the smaller guy inside, I could bring the bigger guy outside. I would never say like, oh man, I was just a force inside, or right, man, I was just like, you know, off the dribble, you know, 25 dribble combo moves. That's not my game. You know, I'm catch and shoot, running off screens. You know, the big guys, I can go by a big guy. I can get, you know, pull up mid range. Is where I made my money.
Right. You know? And it was kind of like you said, during that time, you're a unicorn of sorts, because there weren't that many that size doing those things, yeah, when you were playing.
My first coach at Santa Barbara was just three out, two in. You're my four man. You go down there. I still led the team in 3-point percentage, but he would never run a play for me. Whoa. He just was like, you go inside. And so it was a little discouraging having a few years there where just like he didn't know how to use me properly, because I didn't get that much better from, you know, after redshirting and playing my sophomore, junior year, and then finally getting a new coach that understood how mm-hmm. to use me, where I like tripled in numbers.
Wow.
You know, I mean,
wow. Evolution of basketball, yeah, right?
So that, at least I had a good senior year, because I went to Pepperdine High School, so I signed with a different coach, and then I played for three college coaches.
Whoa.
So, and countless assistant coaches. So there's, you know, that was a challenge in there. But I was fortunate to have a good, you know, a good senior year and a coach that let me do that. We won the Big West. So that was a good experience after having a couple tough years.
right. What was your transition like from college to the pros, and what was your experience like overseas?
Yeah, so overseas, I went right away. I had a job in Australia right out of college, and it was a state league over there. So it wasn't the main NBL league over there, but that was a good experience. It got my feet wet. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up coming back. I had a little school to finish, which was nice. And then I ended up going down to Argentina. And I had a couple agents that helped me. But I was never like a guy on like high up on someone's radar. So I kind of had to go over and prove myself. Right. I think being 6'9" got me in the door for a few places, all conference, things like that. I had some good tape back then. We're sending out VHSs.
Real tape, yeah.
You know? Yeah. And so the transition, like I feel like I got a lot better as I got overseas, because it allowed me to do multiple things. You kind of got you get the keys to the car a little bit. Mm-hmm. Now all that pressure's on you, because it's like, okay, here you go. But if we're losing, then hey, dude, you're out. You know, like here's the keys. But if you know, you crash the car, you're going home. So that part, and the job stability, and you're traveling these places. And Australia's great because they speak English, but you know, play in places like Argentina and Portugal where English, you know, my Argentina teammates, I had two, maybe three guys that spoke some English. Wow. Coach didn't speak any. So we'd be in timeouts, and it was just like,
give me the ball. Yeah.
Unless, it is so funny, because I go back to those days, and like, there's a guy that could translate, this young guy. He didn't play, so he was kind of like the translator, but he gave up like trying to, but at the end of the game, coach would make him translate. I could ask questions if I didn't. But a lot of basketball, you know, and once you learn kind of what you're supposed to do, and he was a yeller, so I didn't really want to hear what he had to say anyways. But if it was the end of the game, like he made sure I knew what I was doing. But you know, basketball is a universal language.
Exactly.
when you yeah, get out there. So that was some good basketball down there, yeah.
When did ministry become a part of what you did with sports? When did you start that journey?
Yeah, you know, I look back to, you know, high school and college, and it was just that the culture of basketball and sports, I was just wrapped up in it. And so I found Jesus after my first year playing in Australia. Yeah. And that's a long story of part of my testimony and all that. And I came back and I just surrendered to God. And I don't know how people play basketball, especially overseas. The guaranteed money's not always there, and it's a 1 year usually deal, and you're kind of like every summer you're like, hey, where am I going? And it's a, mm-hmm. it can be a tough like yeah. mental but I always had peace about it. You know, I had like, God, you're gonna put me in. Looking then I look back at those 6 years, and like where God moved me through that journey was huge. And so God, I really kind of separated myself in go being overseas when I couldn't speak the language. I had my Bible. I had like my home church in San Diego. I would get the CDs and I would just listen to the sermons. So I was really able to separate myself from that lifestyle I was living and wrapped up into that culture. And I was still playing basketball, still working out twice a day and doing all that type of stuff. But my shift began to change. And it really took a while, but like surrendering all those things that I wanted and kind of giving that, like being able to release that to God, that was a journey. Like it doesn't happen overnight. You know, you think, okay, God, I love you. Let's go. Everything's going to be good. That's not how it goes. Yeah.
No, I was, it's interesting. Someone told me this before. If you look at the Beatitudes, right, we always look at those and see them as individual lines that, you know, if you're this, then you're this. But it's, somebody told me to look at it as a spiritual journey. Like when we start off, we're here, we're poor in spirit. And then by the end of it is we're giving ourselves to others. And so look at the Beatitudes in that way. I always tell people that's what the journey is like. And it keeps happening.
We
keep on going through it because God's trying to build us up to somewhere else. And so it's so cool that you were able to do that. Playing overseas in some foreign countries with probably a lot of temptation out there and all those things. And when you retired from the sport and transitioned back out here, did you go straight to Shepherd from there?
No, I moved back. I had gotten married. I stayed home one season. It's actually when I met, I won't share the whole Shepherd story, but when I met the senior pastor there, Dudley. And we were playing on a EA Sports Adidas team that played colleges in the preseason. They don't let you do that anymore. That's actually how I met our senior pastor. He was the coach. And so that was a cool season getting to meet him. But I had stayed home because I had just met my wife. Well, I thought it was going to be my wife. So I had an offer in Poland, I can remember. And it was like, well, stay home. I'd kind of just met this girl. And I go to, you know, it was like, I want to keep playing. So I ended up staying home and because I met my wife. So I played on this travel team. It's funny, on that team, it was me and Scotty Brooks.
Oh, wow.
So and then Pastor Dudley, we were the only believers on that team. And Scotty was past his prime, but he still had that dog in him. You know, we would get out there. Obviously, you're traveling. It was a fun time. But even thinking about that, like we talked about our faith, like on that little team, we were together for a month, like the difference, like from where I was just a few years before in college, where it was all about me, the points, the, you know, the who's in the paper, who's getting the accolades, who's going to, you know, me. And to see that shift and still be all these young guys, a lot of the guys are just out of college playing on this team and they're all chasing that same thing. And like to be at peace and know that God has me where I'm supposed to be. So that was hard, even though, you know, like I had an offer in Poland, am I supposed to go? Am I not? So I ended up staying home. And I'm just rambling now. I forgot the question, but I think you're talking about that, the journey.
Like, yeah. So yeah, Shepherd, getting, yeah. So from
so I came back home, I got married and only team I ever got cut from was the first team the year before I had led the Portugal Division II league in scoring. And so I got picked up by the top division in Portugal. And but I had been not really playing consistently and I was out of shape.
Yeah. Because you're getting married?
I got married, yep. So then I stayed home and I got married. So I'm like, I blame it on that. It's so funny, the guy that came and took my place, he ended up getting the MVP. He won the MVP of the league. He was a stud. I can't remember his name. But lesson learned, you got to stay in shape, because I went over there early in preseason and they were wearing me out. I couldn't even. Yeah, I deserve to be cut. Anyways, so we came back to San Diego, where my wife and I are both from. We were trying to make a go of it. And I always tell this story because, like, it's just a faith journey. We both were kind of working at startups, companies, and we both lost our jobs in the same week. Whoa. And it was like, okay, what are we going to do? You know, I never got rich playing basketball. It was like we actually put in our 30-day notice, the place we were staying. Like, hey, what's going to happen? The next 6 months, we ended up living in a $1 million home in La Jolla. I was helping renovate. We both had found jobs. And so we, you know, it was great. Everything, you know, it's like the way God turned all that around. And then Pastor Dudley comes down and he says, hey, we built this gym. I want you to come run the sports ministry. And not only that, I want your wife, Angie, to come and be my executive assistant. Wow. And so, you know, we always thought we'd be in San Diego, and I honestly had you know, to move to LA was like, man, I don't know if I want to do that, you know. Mm-hmm. But looking back, I had been, before that, I had been offered two jobs in ministry, and it was God kind of preparing me. Mm. One, I was in Australia. I was serving there at the church when I was playing there. I just got involved, and we started serving at the church. They offered me a job, and another one at Young Life. But that, even though those weren't right, those were preparing me to say yes to yeah, Shepherd.
Right.
And I didn't know it at the time, but God had actually been spending those 5 years or so I had been saved and walking with the Lord and closely preparing me for sports ministry. Yeah. I never knew what, like I said, I played a bunch of sports. I never knew what I wanted to do except play sports. And now that journey was over. So it was kind of like, hey, what am I doing? And God had really been preparing my heart for that. And so we moved up here, and that's been almost 18 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. 18 years we've been.
18 years. So wait, I'm trying to think of how long I've known you. If it was 2007, 2000, had to be 2008 or 9 then.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. It's been a minute. Yeah. Back when I could still touch the rim.
Yeah. You almost got a tap on the backboard last
year. Yeah. I actually dunked the other day again for like every year or so. I got to go just make sure I could do it. It's not pretty. It's not pretty.
Yeah. So that's awesome. And so that whole journey bringing you to Shepherd Sports and has grown into this amazing, multifaceted ministry.
Yeah.
Full of, I don't even know how many youth. I know the basketball league is full. The youth basketball league in the summer is, you know, over full. And what do you think, you know, has encouraged you to continue in sports ministry? And what is, you know, what are three things that make it a dynamic ministry as it is?
Yeah. Well, I always kind of like, hey, I'm sorry, God, what do you want me to do? You know, and right now this is where he has me. And I love that I get to help kids, one, get good instruction. Like, we do more than just basketball with the youth. We do basketball, volleyball, soccer, the main sports. I run a surf camp every year. Yeah. But that they're getting solid instruction. We do academies, we do clinics, we do camps, we do a league. So there's a ton of ways for kids to enjoy the game of basketball. So, and just being in sports my whole life and just kind of seeing that. The second part is getting to have people inside the church like yourself come and get a place to serve the Lord. Yeah. Like, our culture wants to separate those two things. And like, if I love Jesus and I should be doing for him, like, how can I serve him? It might be handing out communion. It might be parking ministry. I don't know. I never wanted to do those things. Like, right. But to be in the gym and to be able to coach and give back to the kids and give them that instruction. So those are two things that I love. And the third one is just getting, you know, it's the main focus of what we do is just being an outreach to the community. Yeah. So we'll have 3,500 people come through our doors. Wow. Through the adult ministry, the youth ministry, and our Rec and Fitness program. You know, and those are, a lot of those people don't go to church. They definitely, you know, they don't go to Shepherd, or they come Christmas and Easter. And so what a great non-threatening way to love on people, to have people come. I think it's like the front door of the church. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, I have a buddy. We're actually tonight, we're having service. There's no men's league this week, and we're inviting the entire men's league, you know, several hundred guys. Hey, come to Thursday night service. We're doing a sports giveaway and things like that. So getting them to walk from the gym to the church, because a lot of people have hang-ups. They don't know, especially Shepherd's a big church. So coming in can be like, oh, man, I don't know where to go. What's going on? So it's just giving those families an opportunity, because I think so many people want that for their kids. They want the good character traits. Yes. They want them to have good coaches. Mm-hmm. But they might not know how to do that at home. So if we can kind of begin that foundation for the family and for the kid, and let them see that, hey man, we're brothers and sisters just like you. We love God, and we just want to put that in everything that we do. So it's great that we can connect all that and be out in the community. Yeah,
I think the thing that really stands out to me is you guys are the action of faith that you guys put behind what you guys do, and with I saw it first with the youth teams. Mm-hmm. And when you go to AAU tournaments, after the game, no matter what, you ask them to pray with you. And it's so impactful because I don't think I've ever seen anybody say no. Yeah. I don't know if you have in, you know, 18 years now. But that, and in our men's leagues, we pray before we play mm-hmm. a game and after we play a game, and just that opportunity to speak encouragement and talk to God during those times.
And you know how hard it is in a men's league when the guy just lost and he's all cranky and mad and wants to run out the gym, and his teammates are calling him over, hey, let's pray. And it just, like, it just centers you, man. This is a men's league, you know. It's not game seven. Even game seven, we should still be honoring God. Right. But, you know, it's a, we get too caught up in how well we, especially with athletes, how well we do, you know. And there's something bigger we should be looking at. You know, I think it helps ground us.
What's the biggest impact you've seen from doing that? Whether it was in the youth, you know, on the youth side when you're praying with teams, or in the men's league, have you seen something?
Well, watching kids get baptized, or adults, all of a sudden they're part of the church, or they go from, hey, I'm just playing, to now I'm coaching and serving, and they're coming to camp. That's always fun to see. Because they start, you know, being around that environment that we're trying to create. I think that's a powerful thing. So those are always my favorite, like, wins. Or you hear a story like, hey, so-and-so came and got baptized, or I saw him in church. Really? Like, yeah. I knew they haven't been in church. I mean, quick story. Like, I know we don't force them into devotional with the youth league, but we had a Muslim family that was in there. And do we have to go? And no, you don't have to go. We're walking to. And, you know, 4 or 5 weeks in the season, and they're, the kid and the parent are over there listening to the coach give his devotional. Wow. And it was just like, so again, the way to connect with people, you know, just through love and patience and caring for people. Yeah,
absolutely. No, it just had an impact on me, that the boldness to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think it just speaks to the love as you guys show in the ministry. And that's why people are comfortable there, and it continues to grow. So Eternity Sports, you see us rocking the shirts. Check it out, Eternity Sports. You started it five years ago. It's been 5 years now.
Yeah.
What is Eternity Sports all about?
So Eternity Sports is twofold. One is we have an arm that we want to help other sports ministries around the country. It's not, I can't go down the street and find someone else that does what I do at Shepherd. Like, it's just, it's a little more popular in the Midwest, sometimes in Baptist churches. So we want to try to help them with materials and be effective in their communities and doing sports ministry. That's one part. I've been doing that for, you know, like I said, 17, 18 years. And then the other part is wanting to help coaches and athletes be able to connect God to their game. And we do that through a podcast, through articles. And our most recent thing is we just launched a docuseries.
Yeah.
And so I'm awesome. I'm excited about that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, the docuseries, guys, has, 10 episodes?
11 episodes.
11 episodes. Yeah. And it's all testimony from professional athletes who've gone through it. You know, you can check up the professor, Daryl Strawberry. You probably know the people, who they can catch on there. It's awesome just to see their journey. Josh goes with them, and you get to see and hear their testimony hands-on about their journey and where they are. And it's like, even after they were millionaires, some of them, and the ups and downs that they have through their journey, and how their faith has kept them level and above water and thriving, you know, even after that.
It's powerful, I think, just because you can't argue people's testimony. You know, we have NFL MVPs. We have, I think, like, there's 23 athletes, professional Christian athletes. I think the social media reach of these guys is insane. You know, we have, like, a silver medalist high jumper. You never heard of him. But you also have, like, Sean Alexander, NFL MVP. You got, like, two-time motocross champ. Jenny Finch, the softball pitcher. Daryl Strawberry. So there's some big names. There are also some other guys that maybe you're like, I remember that guy.
Yeah.
You know, we got pro bowlers. You know, Olympian. So, but to hear how their faith was in their story, but going back to the culture, when you interview them, what we see is sports only.
Yes.
And so, but that's not who that person is. Like, that's not, like, when we're sitting here talking, like, I can't talk about my journey going playing professional basketball without talking about, you know, my faith.
Yes.
That's a big part of who I was and how that allowed me to do that for so long. So it's fun. All the athletes challenge me to like a fun game or something silly. Like, we have a X Games skateboarder. So he has me doing like some, like, kind of like a fish out of water. Like I said, I played a lot of sports, but there's some, like, I'm trying to high jump. Like, it's just, I've never, it's so awkward. So there's some fun stuff like that. So, and then, so it keeps it, it moves quick. It's fun. It's a lot of traveling all over the country. Yeah, I just, I'll take a moment just to thank, I mean, I never thought I'd be shooting a docuseries. Right. You know, we had to raise, you know, several hundred thousand dollars, and people gave to the project, and it's out now. You can go watch it. We've partnered with Angel Studios, mm-hmm. which they're known for The Chosen, but their app is free. The browser's free. You can watch all 11 episodes right now for free. They do a cool pay it forward model. So that was my biggest thing, is we didn't make any money on it. We just went and shot it. We wanted to do that. We're prayerful. We might be able to do a season two next year, but it's out. I just want people to see and hear these stories, especially yes. for any young hooper. Like right. the other hooper we have is Anthony Tolliver, 13-year NBA NBA vet. Yeah. He's got a great heart for Jesus, and he's got a story about when he played with Steph his rookie year, which is really incredible, like a faith powerful, you know, powerful story. You definitely want to hear.
Yeah, no, it's awesome that you're. How did you, let me ask this, how did you find all those athletes? I know you knew some of them, but yeah. how did you get connected to know that, you know, these are the believers mm-hmm. and want to connect
with
them?
We were getting ready to launch this right before COVID hit and everything shut down. So we ended up shooting like the end of that 2020 year. But I had like four or five guys that I knew. I was like, okay, these guys are starting and we'll just try to figure it out. Only a couple of those guys ended up actually being on the docuseries. And it was just one of those God things, how he orchestrated. I'll use the Trey Kennard for example. He's a two-time motocross guy. I never heard of him. I don't do motocross. But you ask anyone to motocross, they say, oh, I know who Trey is. And I know a pastor in Hawaii. His son-in-law shoots motocross. And so he like, okay, and Trey's become a buddy. Like he's awesome. He's just been awesome. And so just things like that, just God kind of working. So I really felt at peace, like, who's on the show? Because it was all orchestrated. Like I just kept knocking on doors. I mean, honestly, even then just the partnership with Angel, that was like another thing. We had it all shot, everything was done, but we didn't have a distributor.
Yeah.
And so it was like, hey God, here we go. You know, and that was a long journey of like patience. We had some other smaller offers. It just didn't feel right. And, so we feel really good partnering with Angel and just kind of how all that goes. It's like season two. It's like, hey, I'm going to keep pushing on the door. If God shows me, hey, we're going to do it. We're going to do it.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. I think that this is so vital to youth sports,
mm-hmm.
100% and getting that, you know, the devotion part and are the resources that you can use, because it develops that spiritual side. Mm-hmm. It also just develops character. It develops the discipline, and it's all scriptural based.
Yeah.
And so the impact that it has is way more than right now. And, you know, there's kids that I've known through Shepherd, mm-hmm. coaching a team or helping out, that, mm-hmm. you know, are grown now,
yep.
and still carry those things or still remember those experiences that we had and that we used during that time.
Yeah.
And I think it carries on for generations and generations to come. Like,
I hope, yeah. It makes me feel old, because I got two guys interning for me right now that both played in our club program, and they were like 10, 11, 12 years old.
Yeah.
And I don't feel any different, but when I see them and they're grown and they're big and they're you know, it's like, but now they're in there serving and spending their summer, you know, giving back to the kids, because they were on the other receiving end of that before. Mm-hmm. That's powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So through at Shepherd and Shepherd Sports, there's a lot of people who come through.
Mm-hmm.
And in leagues where there's literally, it was like a pretty much a pro summer league a couple years there where we were running. What's your experience like just being around hoopers and, you know, NBA players, and how you share Christ with them? You know, like you said, it's a comfortable, subtle space where we
yeah.
do it. And, you know, I think the most known is the partnership that you had with the Holiday family and mm-hmm. the camp that we ran at Shepherd and all
yeah.
that. What is it just like being around those guys and sharing your faith with them?
Yeah. So it's different depending on the guy. Mm-hmm. We've been fortunate, obviously, being in LA and where we're located. You know, we get not only just NBA guys, but people wanting to be in the gym all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So we always want, again, the same ideas, that this is outreach. So we have guys come in there, and a lot of times what I'll do is like, hey, yeah, they can play, but hey, I want to pray before we start. Just a yeah. little subtle, just some things like that. just kind of be around. You know, it's handful of guys you actually have relationships with, but some guys are just coming in, or they're working out and doing different things. Just to know that we're there, and that, hey, this is a church, an extension of the church, and we want you to feel that. You know, just like an NBA guy that comes in there, the same rec guys coming in there, they're only coming because it's a nice gym and a nice league.
Yeah.
So we have to be able to, and it can't be the same across the board. So it depends on the relationship I have or the connection I have. And sometimes I believe that my relationship or who I'm trying to share my faith with is not necessarily the NBA guy that's in the limelight. Sometimes it's the trainer. Sometimes it's the other guys. You know, trying to have an impact with all those guys. And then giving, you know, we talk about Drew, but giving those guys a place to serve.
Yeah.
You know, being in the gym, and for years we had a camp called the Drew Holiday Camp.
Before you start that, because that's the question at the end. We're going to bring it in now. Okay. Where were you when? Question is, where were you when you first met me? Go ahead. Now you can talk.
Yeah,
about
yeah.
It.
Okay. So this is a great story because I first met you at the Drew Holiday Camp.
Yes.
Brought in by another guy that used to work with me, and then I don't know how we got playing on a team together. Do you remember that?
It was Joe Frazier.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then when we got Joe on the team, and me and Joe used to work out together, and I think he invited me onto the team. And
okay.
That was our first time playing.
Yeah, yeah. So that was cool, and then you know we played every week since, I think.
Yeah.
So where was I when I first met Drew Holiday?
Yes,
is a great story. So Drew, the gym had just opened, and Drew was in high school, so he was at Campbell Hall, but his parents had moved up to the Valley, and he was in the gym. I think Justin was there too, and I'd heard like, okay, hey, these guys are, hey, he's supposed to be good, and you know, I'm still 30, like I'm only a couple years out of playing. I actually was still playing in the semi-pro league here in California my first few years. So I was still like, I was still hooping. Oh, this guy's supposed to be this and that. And you know, so he's a, 17-year-old kid. Drew was Gatorade player of the year.
Number one player in the country.
Yeah, in the country. And I didn't know all that. You know, I knew a little of that at the time. But we were playing, it was just an open gym. And we got tied up in a loose ball. And I remember thinking to myself, dude, that guy is strong.
Yeah.
And I'm a 30-something-year-old man, and he's a 17-year-old kid. And I don't remember anything about that game except this loose ball we got tied up in. And I don't remember who won. I just remember, like, dang, that kid is strong. Because he didn't look it. You know, just some guys just have that strength, and Drew had that strength. So it was fun to walk alongside him. And then, obviously, you know, won at UCLA, and then he's, you know, in the league. Young, you know, and so he was coming home in the summers and living with his parents. His parents have well, I have a great relationship with them. They've been amazing. They've helped serve and been in our camps. And so really we ran the camp and had Drew in there, and he would bring guys that he, you know, as we kept going, would bring guys into the gym, which was a great opportunity. And like we're saying, bring guys into the gym, and we're talking about Jesus, and they're giving back to the kids, which eventually turned into that, and some other connections turned into this kind of pro-am summer league. And we used to do the full court. Mm-hmm. We need to bring that back, but I don't want to get on that big court again.
Right, man, that court is long.
Yeah. So it's been fun, you know. And then we turned it to the Holiday Family Camp. With Justin and Aaron, and Drew had a family and moved away, and so then Justin and Aaron were there a lot, and then now they're all married and have kids, and so it's changed to just be our all-star camp. But if they're in town and we can get them to come and be a part of it, or we get some other guys to come around and speak or show up to camp, the kids just they eat that up. Mm-hmm. And again, it's just another reason to be in that the Shepherd Gym.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. No, that's where I met you. Was that Drew Holiday Camp? I forget what or whatever. Yeah, it was when it was the Drew Holiday Camp still by in itself. And then, that's where I met you and got everything going. And I started helping out with the clinics and academy and people don't know this. That's my, in living in California, that's where I first started doing basketball training.
I take credit for all your success?
100%. I'll give it all. You, Jason Wyatt, for inviting me over. I was, you know, doing other stuff, but always played basketball and all that. And that's my first opportunity to train. And like, oh, I might be okay at this. And, I was being, I was put in a position to lead and just do all the stuff. I was a defensive specialist then. It's like, hey, Todd, do your defensive drills, right? And that's really what started my training career at that camp. And then I had a couple private clients come from being at that camp. Mm-hmm. And those clients are the ones who turned into the core. What we see now is like those kids were the ones who, they always have a special place. Yeah. Chris Wong. Chris Wong was like my first private client who's now graduated from CSUN and actually about to come work for me.
Really?
At CORE.
That's
cool. It's crazy just those kids and what was just the seed that was planted there. Yeah. And to have the, I guess, the faith and the confidence and seeing how it works, how to put in the ministry and the sport together. Yeah. And that's what we carry through. That's why we're partnered at Christian School. We're partnered. And we put all that together. It's like, hey, I'm on display that I'm living this life for Christ and I'm doing this for Christ. And, you know, hopefully the seed is planted into these kids as they grow.
Especially young, at a junior high age that you're working with, there's so much. I mean, we've all been, and we know how hard it is anyways.
Yes.
But to have some of that foundation, to have coaches around that care for you.
Yes.
That where it's not transactional.
Yep.
You know, there's too many transactional coaches. Mm-hmm. But to really invest in a kid, and I've seen from a distance you do that, stay invested in these guys' life, you know, especially you're working with high-end guys that end up in the league quickly or they're at a big program. And I know those circles get shrunk up so quick. And, you know, where's the faith going to come from?
Yep.
You know, because everyone's after something when it comes to all that money. So I think that's a powerful place. I love hearing that. Like you mentioned, like what's the one of the three things that I enjoy, like hearing stories like that. Even though I really didn't do much, just like, but sometimes just the power of an invitation and being involved, like giving something like that, that's really cool.
It's also the place where I met Paul Tate, who I worked for at Heritage Christian for years, and where my program is. That's where I met Paul. He was going around passing out flyers that he shouldn't have for a Paul George camp, a Drew Holiday camp. I didn't know they were friends then. I was being a police officer, and I was like, man, you're not supposed to be doing that. And he was like, I want to hire you. I'm like, all right, this works. And so, you know, one of my good friends, best friends now, and it's just crazy. Like, Shepherd's been, you know, just a consistent part of my life since I moved here to the Valley. Yeah. You know, that was 2009 is when I think I started that, and that was 2007 when I moved back out here. And so it's been very consistent and still playing there to this day and, you know, coached a summer team a few years ago.
That's
like
why I'm
9 and 10 year olds. I'll never do that again.
So that's why I'm really here. We need some coaches for our summer league.
I'm not doing the young kids anymore. It was the most stressful.
It's hard.
Stressful coaching ever. It was fun. It was rewarding.
Yeah,
for sure.
But if you don't take the if you take the same mindset as you're working with these other, you'll drive yourself nuts. You got to take.
It became 100% about ministry and giving these kids confidence and, you know, allow them to have fun.
That's
basketball's
cool.
Supposed to be fun and let them fall in love with the sport and everything else follows from that. So
For sure.
Awesome. So we're going to go to my Rushmore. Okay. Rushmore, your top four. And since he's a shooter, I don't know if you guys understand this. Like, literally, I throw him the ball down the court and I just stay on defense. That's how good of a shooter he is.
That just means I shoot a lot. That doesn't mean I'm a good shooter.
Yeah. I mean, nobody keeps percentages, but I count on him making it more than missing it for sure.
I appreciate that.
And so your top four shooters, NBA. Or you know, not even have to be NBA. You might know somebody I don't. Top four shooters all time.
Okay. Well, I got to go Steph, number one. That's a no-brainer the way he shoots. I'm going to put Ray Allen in there. These are no-brainers. Doing top four. So the other guy, and I'm probably just biased, but Larry Bird. Mm-hmm. Just because, the way he launched that thing. I would never teach anybody to shoot like that, but man. And that's right when I kind of like started watching basketball and all that. He was, you know, that was a big Laker-Celtic rivalry. Man, the fourth guy to put in there, I think we could put 100 guys in that spot, but I'll put I'll put Clay in there.
Okay.
I'll put Clay in there. You'd be mad I was going to leave Clay off.
I was about to, oh, man. how are you not? Yeah, no, that's a solid four. I think, like you said, there's some that are just belong in there. And yeah. So Steph for me, Clay, I think they're two. I think they're top two.
Okay.
All time. Just what Steph's able to do is just ridiculous. And then Clay's consistency and his form. And like, I tell, shoot like Clay, not like Steph.
Yeah.
I said, Clay shot like Steph first.
Yeah.
Or was that Steph shot like Clay at first, and then he's just kept going. And so then, oh, man.
So the other one I was thinking of was Reggie.
So like, Reggie's Reggie's there for me. That's when I started watching basketball was in those years. It's Reggie and his, man, he's, once again, form. I would never teach anybody to shoot like
but
that.
Man.
But, man, the confidence, the, like, you can't leave him open, the grit that he played with Reggie. Now, so the interesting one is Ray for me because he makes a lot of threes. Give me a second. I want to make sure I get this right. I really got to think. I don't want to mess this up. Is it Ray? It's probably Ray. It's probably Ray. It's probably Ray. I was thinking some other guys, but I'll let it go.
Okay.
We'll go Ray Allen.
Well, a few of these young guys, how this league has turned, you know, turned.
Exactly. And that's what I'm, you know, I like, you know, I'm watching these new guys coming in, the potential to be where, you know, and then you have Kyle Korver, you have Steve Kerr, you have these guys who, man, who can hit shots. J.J. Redick.
Yeah.
Like, guys who are some shooters, man.
Yep.
And but if we, you said top 3-point shooters, then I have to go Ray. I think J.J. had a lot more mid-range to his game. Kyle Korver is the one who almost tipped the scale for me.
Yeah.
I actually met him recently at a pre-draft or a NBA draft workout. And the man and his hands are different.
Really?
That's why he shoots like that. Man, they're like pillows. Under and the bones are under them, and I'm like, that's why he's a shooter. I was like, man, I shook his hand 4 times. I was like, man, I need some of that. I need some of that. Whatever you got
rub
in
there,
man. Let me get some of that, man. It was
that was my son's favorite player for a while. Yeah, watching Kyle shoot something, man. That quick release too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. So this is the part of the show where we flip the script. Two questions you have for me could be about anything.
About anything. Let's get personal.
Uh-oh.
What's the weakest part of your game? Has anyone asked you that?
No. I don't think anybody's ever asked me what's the weakest part of my game. The weakest part of my game is the first thing that popped in my mind. Are you talking about today or overall? Because there's
just overall. Like,
let's go overall. Okay. Today to be conditioning and
yeah.
So that's what I say. It's like, if I'm not in shape, I'm just terrible.
You got small kids. That's excusable.
Yeah. Thank you. I still got to get back in shape. And then so my overall is probably not recognizing when I'm off, and you're experiencing it now. It's like I'm such a optimistic thinker. I always think the next shot is going in, and being, you know, this combo point guard, because I'm good at setting people up and I can get to the rim and score. And when I'm hot, I make shots. It's like, you know, I'll knock down 5-6 threes. But when I'm cold, or if I get hot early, and then I, you know, get cold, I'll keep on shooting, trying to find that hot streak again.
See, that's just mental. We can fix that.
It's a mental. That's all I want
to
say.
Don't worry, guys. I try to fix it. After he misses 2 or 3, I yell at him.
He does.
Go to the hole.
Follow through or get it. He does either tell me, go to the hole, or like, hey, I can see that one, Todd. Don't shoot it like that. Like, so, yeah. I think it leads back to mental toughness. So it's the mental part of staying focused on what's important and constantly trying to do the right thing in the game all the time.
Yeah.
And I kind of, you know, it's a little pride, honestly. It's a little pride in there. So, but I think that's my weakest part. What would you say my weakest part of the game is?
I didn't think of that. But yeah, now that you say it, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think pretty well.
One thing I think why we've played together so long, we both have the same idea, like, let's play and make the best basketball play.
Yeah.
Like when I was younger, it was like, give me the ball, get out of my way. You know, me shooting a shot with 3 guys on is better than you shooting a wide open shot. That was my philosophy.
Right.
But to be a shooter, you kind of, like you're saying, you almost have to forget the last one, you know, and you're on to the next one. But there is something you got to realize, hey, I got to get the other guys involved. I got to get, you know. So, yeah, I would say that. I don't think you have a lot of a lot of weaknesses. Mm. Yeah.
All right, question two.
Question two. Okay, well, let's talk about what was the catalyst for your faith?
Catalyst for my faith. So I grew up in church, and so it was pretty, how do I say this the right way? I'm going to be politically correct. I'm talking about my family. I seen the wrong way to do things, you know, through siblings, family members, and all that growing up. And so I was always the kid to make sure that I wasn't in trouble and doing the right thing. So I just listened. You know, we went to church every week. I was an usher. I was in the choir. Can't sing. I did the announcements. I was a heavy participant. You know, I was like six when I was like accepted Christ, when in front of the church accepted Christ. And, you know, there was an emotional thing that happened for sure. And I really tried, I think, being that young, to live my life the right way and do the right things. And once I moved away to Kansas, me and my best friend held each other accountable, really, really accountable. We weren't smoking, drinking, messing with girls. Like, we held each other accountable, and we moved away from each other, and both of us fell into some of those temptations. And then moving back to California, still had those same habits. The catalyst of my faith happened when I felt, what was it? I felt like I was just wandering. I had no direction. You know, things were happening that I thought would never happen to me because of, I think, the covering that I had for so long of either my family or just being accountable. And I was kind of by myself during that time. And some things woke me up. And then it was that commitment to something bigger than me. Something to live for rather than to chase after, I think, was the thing. And I think I don't know what that is exactly. Like, it was you know, it happened when I met my wife, though. Where me and my wife got serious, let me say that. When me and my wife got serious, that's what like really triggered, like, hey, if I'm going to be a husband to her, you better get your stuff together, or this is going to go to ruin.
Well, I think even like in sports, like with kids, it's and the question probably should have been like, when did you own your faith? Because I grew up in the church a little. I grew up in the church too, and have a similar kind of story, but not as involved as you were. But it became about sports and the kids and all that type of stuff, and so. There's I think a moment when God's working or you know, drawing you towards you, and this has been hitting me hard lately. This thing, are we doing it for God, or are we doing it for ourselves in God's name? You know, so that's a big shift. You know, are we just going to church, or are we the church?
Yes.
You know. So I think the same way is like, okay, if this kid doesn't want to own his basketball, he might play D1. He might play Kentucky because he's just that much bigger and better than everybody. But until that kid owns it, he's not going to reach his full potential.
Yes.
And I think God has the same way. Like, okay, yeah, maybe we're going to heaven, but loving Jesus is not an insurance policy. It shouldn't be. That's not how God designed it.
Right.
And so to live for God is a different thing.
And then I'm gonna say it's my wife. It's when I met my wife, when I got serious about that. It was I got serious about God. It was before that. Something transpired that was like, all right, you got me, God. I surrender. And you know, I was just heavy with women during that time before I got serious with my now wife. And when I made that decision to stop doing that, and it got my attention, and then my wife was just there during that time, like, oh, I'll be with you.
Yeah.
Like, okay, we go to church. We can, you know, live the right way. And that was it. I think that was the biggest catalyst, is like, I just got to be a man. And then that's when all the things that where I am today happened. Mm-hmm. That's when basketball became ministry. Like, I tell people all the time, like, church and Todd, you're a pastor and all these things, like, they, you know, speaking life into me. I'm like, yeah, I'm a pastor of Core Prep Academy. Core Prep is just a ministry. It's a big old ministry where I'm getting to invest into kids. Like, basketball is easy. These kids are going to be good at basketball whether they go to core or not. Like, do we help them? Of course. But they love basketball, but the growth that I see from them, mm-hmm. the things that they learn, the baptisms, the coming to me for real life advice is what it's all about. And as soon as I made that decision, like, God, you got me. Mm-hmm. That's what it keeps just going.
You know? Yeah. Even us talking about this is a connection point. Like we met over basketball, but there's been a much bigger connection, you know, or even just the way we're talking now and those, how all that's part of our life, you know, that can't be lost. And I think that's a story that has to be told. You know, absolutely. Especially for these athletes we look up to, you know, and we idolize and want to be like, and you know, but if they're believers, their faith is who they are. Yeah.
Yeah. And I try to be that person to those, especially those guys going to the NBA. It's like I have an opportunity every year to do the pre-draft and with those guys, and you know, they start following me on Instagram, so they're seeing the scripture I post. They see how I talk to them and the things that I'm about. And some of them just engaged. They're like, oh, yeah, I used to go to church before college. And how do I, and you know, be on the same things, or just are attracted to that light that's inside. And so being able to use that for them as they're about to go on a different journey that most people don't go on, you know. So, just continuing to use that. Everything we do is ministry focused, and it's a good reminder for me all the time, because core is a business as well, along with the ministry. And so getting tied up in that business part always can become frustrating if I don't keep the focus on what God's calling me to inside of core.
Totally.
So
a big part of Eternity Sports is, like, for us is basketball. Like that's been our tool. Like I show up and I'm 6'9". And we played the kids just automatically want to listen. It's not right. They'd automatically, but the people listening, that they have their own group of people, whether they're young or older, and like that they're, if they're around that, like they have those opportunities. It might not be the next, you know, Steph Curry, but God's called us to be around those, you know, we have those people around us wherever that's at. We should be connected, and that should be part of who we are. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. So you have 24-second shot clock. Okay. You can look into the camera directly. Tell the people anything you want them to know about, you know, Eternity Sports, about any message that you want for the people. 24-second shot clock.
24 seconds.
And go.
Hey, Jesus loves you. And I know you're probably watching this because you love hoops. But if you have a second, go check out EternitySports.com. We got devotionals. We got articles. And we also have our docuseries. We'd love for you to check. What a fun way to see professional athletes living out their faith. You too can connect your faith to your game right now. EternitySports.com.
Wow, I think he was the first one to do an actual 24 seconds. Thank you, Josh. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, man.
For being on the show,
absolutely.
Man. Yep,
good to catch
up. We'll see you guys next time. Peace.